God's words.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Spoke about posture, and now I want to talk about breath, breathing. And so I thought I would let Suzuki Roshi do a little talking, and then comment on his what he has to say, which I kind of what I realize I always do.
Excuse me, Paul, could you turn it up a little bit?
Is that better? Okay, yeah. So he says, when we practice Zazen, our mind always follows our breathing. Of course, the word always here is not necessarily so. our mind always follows our breathing. So, I remember that he used to say, your mind should be subtle enough to follow your breathing without controlling it. Because breathing practice in as our practice is not breath control. It's simply letting the breath come as it comes and go as it goes. Not trying to establish some kind of rhythm, but simply letting the mind follow is a kind of, maybe not such a good word. Follow kind of looks like you're making an object of breath. Like following a snake or something with your vision. But simply to be breath, follow breath is to be one with breath. I remember that at one time he said he wanted us all to count our breath from 1 to 10. And so we all tried doing that. And you know, that's what we always say, count your breath. And when you get to 10, you start again with 1. And then when you get to 50, you come back to 1. Or when you get to 3, if you can get to 3, that's pretty good. And then you kind of wander around the universe and you come back to 1. But this is just a device, you know, counting your breath. He said it's like the handle on a cup. You don't need to have a handle on a cup to drink out of a cup, but we put the handle on there to make it more, you know, more convenient. So counting the breath helps to focus on the breath. But it's simply, it's a device. And it's not necessary to count your breath. Having learned how to count breath, when you find yourself confused or agitated or, you know, you can't really find it, then you have that experience and you just go right to it. That's my experience. Is I automatically go to counting the breath when my mind is wandering or when I need to focus in some situation. So it's good to learn how to do that. And that's what we should teach beginners, to count their breath when they I guess you say it's a device, but to help them concentrate on breathing. But it's not necessary to always do that. I remember kind of Gary didn't like it at all. I know. But I think it's very useful, and it's a good thing to learn. And and it's something in your pocket for when you need it. In your upper sleeve, I'll say, when you need it. So, of course, we come back to our posture and our breathing, but posture is first, breathing is second. Posture is first because that is the fundamental basis. Without posture, there's no breath. And without breath, there's no posture, of course. But posture is the foundation, and then we can breathe more easily if we have good posture, whatever that is for you. So he says, when we inhale, the air comes into the inner world, and when we exhale, the air goes out to the outer world. The inner world is limitless, and the outer world is also limitless. We say inner world or outer world, but actually there's just one whole world. In this limitless world, our throat, I don't think throat is a good way, I would say windway. Our windway is like a swinging door, because we don't really breathe in our throat. We breathe down here. But anyway, this is a subtlety. The air comes in, I'm sorry, when we say inner world or outer world, but actually there's just one whole world. In this limitless world, our windway is like a swinging door. Just the air comes in and goes out, like someone passing through a swinging door. If you think I breathe, the I is extra. There is no way you say I. What we call I is just a swinging door which moves when we inhale and when we exhale. It just moves, that's all. When your mind is pure and calm enough to follow this movement, there is nothing, no I, no world, no mind, no body, just a swinging door. Just the breath. And it's, of course, it's not my breath, because I'm not breathing. If there is an I, for convenience, I am being breathed. This is what I preach all the time. I am being breathed. I am not breathing. I don't have anything to do with it, frankly. I don't have anything to do with the way the blood runs through the veins. But we don't say, I'm, you know, we don't associate blood that way, but we do with breathing. Because we feel that we have some control over our breathing. And to a certain extent, we do control our breathing. But mostly we control our breathing inadvertently. We control our breathing through anxiety, fear, calmness, laughter, tears, myriad ways. Our breathing is always being affected by our feelings, emotions, thoughts, and our environment. But so we have a lot of inadvertent control over the breath and some advertent control. If you're swimming, you take a deep breath, and if you're playing an instrument, you breathe at certain places so that you can phrase correctly. And when you speak, we're always breathing. We have breath control when we speak, because inadvertently you take a breath and then you make a sentence. So you say, inadvertently, you take a breath and make a sentence. I knew exactly how much breath to take in order to say that, because I've been speaking for a long time. But the baby, when your child, when they start speaking, they'll take a breath in between, you know. because they haven't internalized automatic think their breath with their thought and their action. So we do that, but basically breath is the universal activity. So this is the point. The point is breath is just universal activity. So that's called intrinsic existence or intrinsic activity. Intrinsic in the sense that it's beyond my experience. Just like Buddha nature and big mind is intrinsic, and it's beyond my experience. But at the same time, what I experience is that. So we have intrinsic and experiential. Intrinsic is what we are, and experience is what we can feel or discern or actualize from what is intrinsic. So it's really, although I say I'm breathing, it's really the universe that's breathing me. So we experience this universal activity as breath. And we have that wonderful opportunity, because usually we don't think, we don't, although we're always experiencing universal activity, it doesn't appear in our consciousness as that. So to really experience our experience as universal activity is enlightenment. I know you want to have a question, but I'm not there yet. So these two aspects, intrinsic and experiential, universal and personal. So as I was saying the other day, universal and personal are the two aspects of our life. The purpose of Zazen is to be one with our universal activity without anything interfering. Of course, whatever is interfering is also universal activity. But it's just more difficult for us to understand it. When we have our 7-day session like this, some people can sit the whole thing, some people sit day and night, morning and evening, and then they go to work and break it up in various ways. And so then it's easy to get the idea that sitting in the morning and the evening is practice, and then I go to work, and that they're two different things. The only reason why you can sit in the morning and the afternoon is because your work is your sesshin. Otherwise, I wouldn't let you come and practice that way. It's not like you're picking up little bits of sesshin and then going to work. The attitude that you have in your morning zazen is the same attitude you have in your work day. Driving on the freeway, going to work, doing whatever it is that you have to do, is how you move through that day and then come back and sit zazen again. This is this is how we actually practice. And so it's not like you're doing part of this and part of that. It's all one piece. So we're practicing sesshin, but actually sesshin is practicing us in the same way. So we should think about it in that way. If we divide it, then we have two different kinds of activity. It's one activity with various parts. In Sashin, we sit Zazen a lot, and then we have a work period. So it's a lot of sitting and a little bit of work. When you go out to work, it's a lot of work and a little bit of sitting. So the proportion is different, but the attitude is the same. So when we can integrate that and understand what we're doing and really make the effort to not fall into the duality of work and sitting, then we have enlightened activity. But that doesn't mean we should all just kind of do a little bit of Zazen and go out to work during Sashin. You do it because you have to. But because you have to, that's great. If you only do it because you want to, it wouldn't work. It doesn't work that way. It only works if you have to. So he says, what we call I is just a swinging door which moves when we inhale and when we exhale. It just moves, that's all. When your mind is pure and calm, pure means non-duality, non-dualistic. Just, it goes and it comes, but actually you can't say which is which. So when we practice Zazen, all that exists is the movement of the breathing. But we are aware of the movement. You should not be absent-minded. In other words, your awareness is what it's about. But to be aware of the movement does not mean to be aware of your small self, but rather of your universal nature, or Buddha nature. So that's what I've been saying. So we don't say, I breathe. If you say, I breathe, then that's aware of your small self. So just breath, just this. It's not even breath, it's just this. For convenience, we give it a name called breathing, but it's just this. It's interesting that, you know, when we, at the end of the day, or from time to time, we rest our body. And we feel tired and rest our body. But we rarely rest our mind. And the mind is working like crazy, and mostly overtime, and never stops. So, you know, when you can sit and simply let the mind, your thinking mind or your perception, be one with the breath, you're giving your thinking mind a rest and refreshing your thinking mind. So this kind of awareness is very important because we are actually so one-sided. And our usual understanding of life is dualistic. You and I, this and that, good and bad. But actually, these discriminations are themselves the awareness of the universal existence. So, here we have to be, he's saying we have to be careful not to say, well, it's just universal existence. There's also I and you and me and these dualities, which are all also expressing universal activity. But because we are not aware of that, even though we are, we become attached to our way of thinking about it. to our ego. So you and I, you means to be aware of the universe in the form of you. And I means to be aware of it in the form of I. But you and I are just swinging doors. This kind of understanding is necessary. This should not even be called understanding. It is actually the true experience of life through Zen practice, which is both cosmic and personal. The cosmic, our cosmic life is our actual closest thing to us as our personal life. So as it says, closer than hands and feet. So when you practice Zazen, there's no idea of time or space. If you're really concentrated, there's no idea of time or space. Time is space, and space is time. This is Dogen's understanding. And of course, a few years ago, he's propounding Dogen's understanding. All of this is like kind of like comes from Dogen's understanding. Space, time. He doesn't say space and time. He says space, time. Time is space, and space is time. We say, I am here at 1 o'clock. Here is space, and 1 o'clock is time. So time, as he says, time is experienced as space, and space is experienced as time. But he says, this kind of understanding is necessary, and this should not even be called understanding. It is actually the true experience of our life through Zen practice. So when you practice Zazen, there is no idea of time or space. You may say, we started sitting at 6:15 in this room. Thus you have some idea of time, 6:15, and some idea of space in this room. Actually, what you are doing, however, is just sitting and being aware of the universal activity. That's all. This movement, this swinging door, is opening in the direction, in this direction, and in the next moment, the swinging door will be opening in the opposite direction. Moment after moment, each one of us repeats this activity, or actually, this activity is repeated. We don't repeat the activity, but the activity is repeated. Here there is no idea of time or space. Time and space are one. You may say, I must do something this afternoon. But actually, there is no this afternoon. There is just... We are doing things one thing after another. So this is very interesting. We're just doing things one thing after another. Is this, and then there's next, and then there's that. But we have concept. We break it down into sections and say, this is the morning, this is the afternoon, which is okay. But we should understand that there really is just one thing happening after another. I understand this pretty well because I've always lived that way. I've never lived in time. Ever since I can remember, you know, people say, well, last September, you know, last September, God, you know, all I kind of know is yesterday and today. So I'm just going just to one thing after a time. One thing at a time, one thing after another. And I don't say that's good. You know, it's just the way I've always done things. So I kind of understand that. But the other side is also important. You know, because I've always lived in that way, one thing after another, there's always been something missing for me. Because it's easy, in the world of busyness, I would get lost. So the nice thing about Zen, even though, you know, it transcends time and space, it's all about time. You know, it's all about time and space. It's about being on time. You know, we ring the bell at a certain time, and it's all about timing. And it's also about be here, space, you know. So, Zen saved me in that way. It gave me a kind of form, you know, for my life, which is pretty much formless. So, anyway, you say, I must do the time and space at once. So you may say, I am doing something this afternoon, but actually there is no this afternoon. We do things one after the other, that's all. There is no such thing as this afternoon, or 1 o'clock, or 2 o'clock. But, nevertheless, at 1 o'clock we will eat our lunch. To eat lunch is itself 1 o'clock. Eating and time are the same. You will be somewhere. But that place cannot be separated from 1 o'clock. For someone who actually appreciates our life, they are the same. They are the same. Now this is a very interesting, I pondered over what he means by this, and I finally came up with my interpretation. For someone who usually approaches our life, for someone who actually appreciates our life, they are the same, time and space. But when we become tired of our life, we may say, I shouldn't have come to this place. It may have been much better to have gone to some other place for lunch. This place is not so good. In your mind, you create an idea of space separated from actual time. You understand what he's saying? Kind of separate them. But when you say, I like it or don't like it, and I go something, so you're tired of your life. That's an interesting statement. Kind of, tired of your life means that you're not connected to the universality of your life, and you only see the other side, which is egocentric. To be one with the universal activity in an experiential way is to let go of ego, because we realize that everything is, that we are cooperating, I like to use the word cooperating, personally with the universality of life. So cooperating means that our small self or ego is directed by the universality rather than by itself. When it's directed by itself, it's called ego. As Dogen says, throw yourself into the house of Buddha or universal activity, then ego has a way to go without cannibalizing itself. So breathing, giving our breath over, giving our sense of self over to the universal activity as breathing. That's how we manage our breath in Zazen. So you may say, this is bad, or I should not do this about something. Actually, when you say, I should not do this, you are doing not doing in that moment. The moment you say that, you are doing not doing in that moment. So there is no choice for you. When you separate the idea of time and space, you feel as if you have some choice. But actually, you have to do something, or you have to do not doing. Not to do something is doing something. Good and bad are only in your mind, so we should not say, this is good or this is bad. Instead of saying bad, you can say, not to do, rather than making a judgment. If you think, this is bad, it will create some confusion for you. So in the realm of pure religion, there is no confusion of time and space or good or bad. All that we should do is just do something as it comes. Do something. Whatever it is, we should do it, even if it is not doing something. So we should live in this moment. So when we sit, we concentrate on our breathing, and we become a swinging door, and we do something we should do, something we must do. This is Zen practice. In this practice, there is no confusion. If you establish this kind of life, you have no confusion whatsoever, even when you are confused. Even when you're confused, because it's not my confusion, it's just confusion. If it's your confusion, then you have confusion. But if it's not your confusion, then it's just confusion. And confusion is not bad. Sometimes it's actually quite good, because confusion is a tool to help you make a decision. If you know how to use confusion, it's not your confusion. If you don't know how to use confusion, then it's your confusion. So this day, I think it was, and therefore I was quoting Tozan's verse about the white cloud in the mountain, but I couldn't remember that one word. But here it is. Tozan, a famous Zen master, said, "The blue mountain is the parent of the white cloud. The white cloud is the child of the blue mountain." Remember that? All day long, they depend on each other. So the word depend is what I can never remember that. They depend on each other without being dependent on each other. Great statement. The white cloud is always the white cloud. The blue mountain is always the blue mountain. This is a pure, clear interpretation of life. There may be many things like the white cloud and the blue mountain. Man and woman, teacher and disciple, they depend on each other. But the white cloud should not be bothered by the blue mountain. The blue mountain should not be bothered by the white cloud. They are quite independent, but yet dependent. This is how we live and how we practice Zazen, both dependent and independent. So what is dependent is universal nature. What is independent is myself. So both dependent and independent. So and this is characterized by teacher-disciple relationship. Suzuki Roshi used to say, "I am the teacher, you're the student." Sometimes you're the teacher, and sometimes I'm the student. In this life, I'm always the teacher, and you're always the student. Next life, you'll be the teacher, and I'll be the student. But for now, this is the way it is. So that kind of relationship, where the student and the teacher are dependent and at the same time independent. Each one keeps its own place, just like the Sangha guy. So if we understand in that way, even though we have a problem, it's not a problem. So this is how we relate. And how we understand our intrinsic nature and our experiential nature. Intrinsically, we are all Buddha. Experientially, we don't know it. Or sometimes we do. When we become truly ourselves, we just become a swinging door, and we are purely independent of, and at the same time, dependent upon everything. So actually, independence means total dependence. And total dependence means independence. So we say, you know, in Zen, you're supposed to stand up for yourself. Stand up, you know, by yourself, independently. Which means totally dependent. Without air, we can't breathe. So each one of us is in the midst of myriads of worlds. We are in the center of the world always, moment after moment. So we are completely dependent and independent. If you have this kind of experience, this kind of existence, you have absolute independence. You will not be bothered by anything. So when you practice Zazen, your mind should be concentrated on your breathing. This kind of activity is the fundamental activity of the universal being. Without this experience, this practice, it is impossible to attain absolute freedom. So which means not to be caught by our ego. Even though our ego or our self, personal self, is present totally, not to be caught by that. So Suzuki Roshi is always saying, don't get caught by anything. Don't get hooked. Don't get caught by anything. That's how we practice. And when we go to work, when we're sitting in Sashin and we go to work, not to get caught by anything. Not caught by anything means not get caught by your ego. We think things are chasing us, or, you know, are out there to, are inhibiting us. But actually, the only thing that inhibits us is our ego. And to be in this place at this time is all there is. So how to have our pure activity in Zazen and our pure activity in our daily life world. We are in the center of the world always. That's an interesting statement. Where is the center of the universe? Scientifically, I don't know. But experientially, right here. We're always at the center of the universe. Even though we feel that we're because here am I, and the world revolves around me. But at the same time, when we let go of self, then we are in the center of the universe. And there are many universes, many worlds, and each one of us has a center, and our world does revolve around us, and we create that world. We create that world through our attitude to what's around us. Our attitude toward our surroundings is what creates our world. So if we want our world to be a certain way, well, make it that way. And then, well, why can't I make it that way? Because circumstances are too heavy, too strong. Well, is it all circumstances? Are we a victim of circumstances? No matter where we are or what we're doing, there is a way to not control our world or our circumstances, but to find our freedom and create our Buddha field in our surroundings. It's myself plus my surroundings plus universal nature. which are not three things. I have time for one or two questions because I see a few puzzled faces. If you raise your hand, that means you've got a puzzled face. No. Cool.
Thank you, Susan. I've been interpreting or translating for myself this phrase, your universal nature, etc., into like one's calling or one's vocation. This is for like a cultural phrase, and it's like when one somehow discovers or is open to one's vocation or one's calling, then this I like this metaphor maybe even more than swinging the door. Well, they got the golden pants. Is this a good equivalent translation of somehow being in touch with one's calling or one's something like that?
Well, let's just take the word calling.
Yeah.
It's like something else is, like there's something that we're met, like we see a path, right? And it has its characteristics, and so that's my work or my destination or something, right? That's what it is that meets the world. And so each one of us has some way to go, even though not everybody discovered what that is. You know, like the butcher and the baker and the da-da-da, right? And so that's our vehicle in the world for expressing our nature. That's our vehicle for expressing universal nature. That's what I would say. And we call it a calling because it takes it out of the realm of my wish.
Turn out of the realm of ego.
Yeah, it takes it out of the realm of ego. But that's a whole other question. But we don't, there are limited callings and unlimited callings. So, for us, how we express the unlimited within the limited. A flower is expressing the whole universal nature in that small being. But we're more complex, so it's harder for us. Tamar had a hand up. Not wondering.
No, I was just thinking that even though I'm responding, the whole day is zazen, there's something very important about actually doing zazen and actually doing sesshin.
Do you think that I was minimizing that?
Did I say you were minimizing?
Yeah.
I don't think I said that. I was just...
Well, to me you said it. He said that, as if.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm not criticizing, I'm just saying that's how I understand it.
What you understand that I'm. What? I don't have a question then. Because you already have the answer, I don't have a question for you.
Okay. But what I thought I was saying was there are two different ways, and if you have to do it this way, then how do you do it that way? I'm not saying that we shouldn't minimize these others.
Yeah.
So that's how I understood your question.
Well, I guess it seems that to me that it can be it's very challenging to create the time for especially a sesshin
mm-hmm.
like this one. And it's also, so it's kind of tempting to say, well, I'll just do sesshin all day long at my job, you know, instead of, you know, crossing off the days on my calendar and coming in to do sesshin. I think it's you know, how to find, on the one hand, everything being sashin, and at the same time, finding the commitment to actually doing sashin.
Yeah.
I think that's
I agree with you.
Yeah.
But I agree with your challenge, that it's very challenging. That's what I agree with. But I think the thing to understand is, wherever you are, that's where you begin. And if you think this is more important than that, then you're minimizing the importance of your life at this moment that's not sitting on the cushion. So, it is difficult, and it's challenging, and that's what makes it vital. So, the important thing is, if you don't say, well, I'll just sit a little bit of sashin and then do something else, you know, to make it easy. That's something else. That's not the same thing as I was talking about. I was talking about, because you have to work in order to. Because that keeps you from doing sitting all the time. That becomes your vehicle. You can call it. You don't have to call it zazen. It's just practice. Everything, you know, practice is continuous. Doesn't end when you get off the cushion. So, otherwise. You know, everybody would have to be here for 7 days. We'd have this little sashin and a few members. So we have to go with our circumstances. How do we practice given what we're given to practice? Faith. So that's, if we actually take up and, you know, just practice with what we're given, instead of saying, well, I think I'll go to the next restaurant because I don't like this one, then we don't have much practice. It's not real practice. It doesn't feel like practice all the time when we're not sitting on the cushion, but it is. And this is how we practice, even though it doesn't look like it. James.
You know, I do count my breaths, and sometimes I find myself counting five, and then I count three, and then I count eight, and I get so. Disconnected.
Yes.
From my breathing, and how can I. How can I reconnect? How can I connect?
Well, you started sitting in 1967 or 8 or something like that.
1970.
So you don't have to count your breaths anymore.
Congratulations. Thank you.
You're anyway, we should breathe down here. You know, this is ego breathing, and this is universal breathing. I know that you can argue that. Because it has to do with fear and anxiety and thought processes and so forth. So, and closing down. So breathing should open us up. And the way that opens us up is that we let the breath come all the way down and breathe from our solar area. And it's full and oxygenizes our body and so forth. And we freeze us. myself.